And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma. We are going to talk some Cubs. Patrick Mooney is on vacation this week, so you will have to make do with just me and Sahadev. One of us will have to offer up at some point when one of the two of us gets happy and excited, the other of us will have to be like, whoa now, hold on. Yes, Patrick is very good. He plays his part very well. So we will do our best in his absence. To that end, kind of, we've got some ups and downs to discuss on this one, because since we last recorded, the Cubs pulled off a pretty darn impressive series win over a Braves team that is probably among the handful of best teams in the last few years of baseball in terms of the regular season, full roster composition, performance. And that is just a unbelievably loaded Braves team. So that was a really solid win. Actually, maybe let's start there before we talk about the opening loss in New York. So we said, all of us, I think we said it on this podcast, and I believe all of us wrote it as well, that going into that Braves series, it wasn't going to be a measuring stick. You know, it wasn't going to be like, there were times when we had seen them play in series, Dodgers earlier this year, New York Yankees series, but last year, a couple years ago, where they got just smoked, and you're sort of, you come up with a sense of either you do belong on the field with this team or you do not belong on the field with this team. And I think we all went into this Braves series thinking, well, for one thing, this Braves team is just sort of outrageously good, and anything can happen in a series when you're playing a team that good. It's just not going to tell you much about your own team. And conversely, we already know this is a competitive Cubs team. Like, there just wasn't going to be any information in that series that was going to change my mind in either direction about it being a baseline, competitive, solid Cubs team. And so, in fairness, even though they won the series, I didn't want to leave it feeling like, uh-oh, they're really good now. This is, they're better than the Braves. I just left it feeling more like I was glad that they performed, not only to win the games, but they sort of performed in the way we had seen them performing over the last few weeks. They won it sort of in the same kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, the offense was pretty relentless once again. They, especially Sunday, I thought that was a great game of coming back every single time Atlanta put up runs, putting together great at-bats, really grinding down the starter. Bryce Elder is kind of coming down to earth. Charlie Morton looked good, I thought. I thought he looked good, and they were hitting him. They were putting up good at-bats. One bad inning from Kyle Hendricks. And it was that, I mean, that lineup, I don't know. Like, I just sit there, and I'm just like, where's the easy out? I mean, now that Orlando Arcia is putting up, and frankly, Orlando Arcia has never been an easy out for the Cubs. I feel like every single time, even during his worst seasons, which are numerous, he was hitting the Cubs. I mean, he came up with that big hit in game 163, remember? I'm pretty sure that was him, right? But it seems like he always has hit the Cubs when he was with Milwaukee, and now he's just hitting everyone. But that lineup is just relentless and terrifying. And there's Matt Olson. If Ronald Acuna didn't exist, Matt Olson would be like among the leaders for MVP candidate, right? He probably still is. That team's awesome. And I think what I came away from that series was a really great offense for Atlanta. I see why they have the best record in baseball. It all makes sense just watching them. You look at the lineup, you get it. But I'm just saying, watching them, it's like, oh, there's no easy out there. And other thing was, like, what a fun weekend in Chicago. What a fun weekend at Wrigley. The weather was kind of icky, overcast, rainy, not great days, but just fun times at the ballpark. Everyone showed up. Atlanta fans showed up and, you know, did their little racist chant and were drowned out by Cubs fans, which was nice. But it was good to feel that at the ballpark and really feel the intensity again. And it's nice to be able to see that at the ballpark. That's what I came away with. I'm not going to say the Cubs are better than Atlanta because I don't think they are. But it's nice to see competitive baseball, great baseball against really good teams. And two good teams, frankly. Just the Cubs are a good team. And we just need to move past that and analyze this team as it is because they're good. And we can accept that now.
If you wanted to take any kind of big picture thing from it, all it would be is a reminder of something we say all the time about the postseason, which is just get in and things can happen. You know, you look at a series like that, which was not a postseason series, although, man, it did have the feel of some of those intense moments, like Fulmer with the bases loaded. Ooh, like, there were some intense moments that had like a postseason feel to it. It's just a reminder that, you can win. You know, it's baseball. It isn't like some of the other sports where you see the matchup and you're like, well, that team cannot possibly win this game or this series. And in baseball, it's not that way. You can have advantages at the edges, but just get in. And I think that spoke to me in relation to the decisions that the Cubs made at the trade deadline to say, you know what, we are going to try to just get in. You know, I think, there are some other teams, the Reds stand out as a team that could have done quite a bit more at the deadline. The needs were, it's not as if they didn't have any needs. And then they went on, a six-game losing streak right after. And I think, I'm not saying they didn't appreciate the value of just getting in, but I respect even more the Cubs' decision to do so, not just because they won games, but because you look again at a series like that against the Braves and you're reminded, you know, if you do get in, good things can happen. So maybe that's where we'll leave that. Let's talk a bit about we'll save the Mets thing for a moment because the smiley portion sets that up well. Let's talk a bit about the lineup, as you aptly recently wrote and you noted just a few minutes ago. It has become a just up and down, really disciplined lineup that is giving pitchers difficult at bats. It's not letting anyone off the hook. I feel like Christopher Morel had one recently, and then Dansby Swanson had one this weekend. A bases loaded walk in a intense moment with close pitches with a pitcher who was battling well. And it was just sort of, I'm not giving in. You know, if you're going to pitch around the edges, I'm not giving in, and I'm going to take my walk. And I think that was emblematic of kind of the feel of this Cubs lineup ever since. You know, well, I won't attribute it to one thing directly, but I am setting up a discussion of post trade deadline Jamer Candelario being added. There is something that has clearly changed in the lineup. There's one specific thing that has clearly changed, and we know the flow of events. If you've got Madrigal, you're wanting to play at third every day. That means Candelario has to play first, which means Cody Bellinger has to play in center every day, which means if you want Mike Tauchman in the lineup, which you do, because right now he's got to be leading off virtually every game, just got to be. Well, he's got to play right field because you're not sitting Christopher Morel, so you're not putting Tauchman at DH every day. And that means that Seiya Suzuki is going to be sitting most days, which aligns with his own struggles. But it's an interesting thing to discuss because it isn't just his struggles. It's not as if he's being sat down solely because, oh, he's not hitting right now, so we're sitting him down. It's also that, you know, someone has to sit, and the flow of positional movement makes sense that it's him too.
Yeah, I mean, others are producing, right? This would be a tougher decision if Tauchman wasn't just putting up great at-bats on a daily basis. It seems like every single... Tauchman had a little blip there, late June, early July, and people were like, ah, here it comes. Here's the Tauchman magic's over. This guy's, you know, that was a flash in the pan. Oh, well, it was fun while it lasted type thing. But no, he's continuing to put up great at-bats. He's actually better since then. He had that blip, and he's hitting for more power and continuing.
Yeah, his contact quality has gone way up.
Like there's those hard hit line drives to left center with consistency. He looks like a really, really good player out there right now. You know, is this a 1 year thing? I don't think we need to worry about all that stuff right now. Just ride it while you can. But yeah, absolutely. I think Tauchman, Bellinger being healthy, and then Swanson coming back are the huge big keys to this offensive turnaround. And then Madrigal's obviously been a quality, you know, he's been strong at the plate, right? And he can handle third base. I think there's been some, the more you watch Madrigal at third, the more you're just like, yeah, he's competent there. But I wonder about these metrics. I start to wonder about these metrics. There was that play yesterday where he fielded a ball. I swear, I was like, how far is he going to run to first? It was just fascinating to see how he's really using that. I know he's been trying to do that, take a couple steps, but that was like a good I'm almost to the mound here. I'm going to throw the ball now. Anyway, it's just the right decision, right? Once you bring in Jamer, you can't be patient anymore with Suzuki. Especially now, it's one thing if it was kind of those struggles that we saw before where he was just hitting the ball hard but on the ground, making quality contact, taking a bunch of walks. These are some of the worst at-bats I've seen in a while. Like even his pinch hit yesterday, whoa, like every single time now, every single game he plays, he's going to have one of those awkward half swings where it's clear he's guessing. Like that's not playable. I don't know what you do right now other than just like try and get him right. You know, the team's going to remain optimistic. I know fans are so ready to always just write someone off as if they can never bounce back, right? I understand that. Everything that's happening right now is how everyone wants to react to and just that's what it's going to be in perpetuity. Seiya Suzuki is salvageable, I believe. I think he can be a really impactful player still. There's something going on in his head that just he is not right at the plate. Like those swings, you know exactly what I'm talking about if you've been watching the games, and they're happening over and over and over again. I can understand once or twice it happening, but when it happens, it's been two and a half weeks now that it's been happening with regularity. There's just something wrong. There's like he needs to just. I'm not sure what the solution is, other than what they're doing right now. I don't know if they need to go to an extreme nature, a phantom IL, something like that. Maybe it's just a lost rest of the season for him. I don't know. It is possible that a reset. I don't know if he'll play on Wednesday against a lefty. All that stuff. We'll just have to wait and see. But it's clear that he's not. It's almost like he forced their hand, right? Like this wasn't like a, oh man, what do we do? It's just, we got to sit Suzuki. Like this is obvious. Like we can't mess around right now. He is not producing and his at-bats are terrible. He's not giving us walks. He's not giving us quality at-bats. We have to sit him. And I think that like he made the decision easy for them.
Yeah, you just have to watch to see, but there's always been a difference between what it looks like when a guy is guessing up there versus when a guy is selecting and attacking. Because it is a part of at-bats, that you are thinking about how a pitcher might attack you, what might be coming in certain counts, what they might try to play off of each other. You are trying to shrink the zone by focusing on, you know, you're trying to cut off half of the plate, or you're trying to target a certain type of pitch, depending on the count, etc. That is okay. That is a part. But when it gets to the point where it just seems like you're a half move behind on every pitch because you're trying to guess every single pitch, that's when you get those takes in counts that make no sense. You know, you're ahead and you're taking a fastball dead red down the heart. That doesn't make any sense, and that's because you outthought yourself. Or you're taking those half swings because you are thinking fastball, you're geared up, and then it's off speed and you're like, ah, shit, and you can't stop yourself because you committed to the guess. And guys go through this. I think what's hard for some fans to accept with respect to Suzuki is because they feel like he never got himself fully established as a quality big league bat, which I would take some issue with that, but I understand that that's some people's perspective. And because they feel like they haven't seen that from him, it's a lot harder to give him the grace of saying, well, this is just a period of time. You know, I feel like we have seen this season from some very successful Cubs hitters, couple week periods where it felt like, yeah, he's kind of guessing up there. He's thinking a little too much. And they get time and they bounce back. And that could have been the case with Suzuki. In a different world, he plays through this. It's a 2-3 week funk. You know, a couple bloops fall. He starts to get his timing back. He's shrinking the zone better. You know, whatever. We've seen it a million times from a million other players. But because of the combination of the Cubs' competitiveness at the moment, the lateness in the season, and Talkman and everyone else producing, this is just how it had to go. There was no... It's like you said, he forced their hand because of the circumstances. It isn't to say that the Cubs would always, in all circumstances, take a very accomplished international player who has shown some very quality metrics in the States and sit him down after 2 or 3 bad weeks. That's not what this is. It's really, there's a lot of circumstances and a guy who is, well, let me feel you out on this. You know, when you wrote about this, you had quotes from Ross and from Dustin Kelly about how Suzuki's doing right now. And it did feel like they were saying without saying that it really is a mental thing, that he's just up there, that he's doing too, almost like preparing too much, trying to play the chess game with the pitcher instead of letting it come to him.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I'd say that. There's no physical issue here, right? They like his swing. They know he's a good ball player. I know fans don't want to hear that when someone struggles, but like, he's had some great stretches. He's looked impressive at times. Last year, when he'd get in his rhythm, he looked awesome at times. There were flashes. There have been flashes this year. They haven't been as long. I think it's been an odd year for him. And one thing that you didn't say there, Brett, like if they were out of it, like, it's not just like just giving him time to give him time. That he's got 3 more years on his deal. Like, he's a part of this. He's supposed to be a big part of this contention cycle. So they want to give him, you know, they want him to thrive, right? He needs to thrive for this to really work well. I mean, imagine if he was a 120 weighted runs created plus, which he essentially was last year, right? That's not great, but it's not bad. If he was that right now, the Cubs would be thrilled with that, because that's basically what Mike Talkman is. So, yeah, it's just it almost certainly is a mental thing, but I don't know if, like, it started with, I got to get my mechanics right, my swing feeling right, and now I'm feeling things out, and now I'm overthinking everything, because the emphasis, and now I spoke to Dustin Kelly about 2 or 3 days before he got benched, right? That's with air quotes. They haven't called it that, but that's essentially what it is. And he immediately said, like, the fastball stuff. We've been focusing on fastballs. We've been telling him, you know, sit on the fastball, essentially, because your swing is good enough to correct for the breaking ball and anything off speed, but you can't adjust to the fastball if you're up there guessing. I'm going to be writing about Talkman soon, and he says something similarly about just how his approach works. Like, he's always ready for the fastball because it's all about timing and space. And when you're ready for the fastball, your timing is right and you have space to hit, and then you can adjust from there. Right now, like, oh man, the number of down the middle fastballs that Suzuki has taken that he should be crushing is jarring. It's not just taking; he's either taking them or then doing that half swing with them and swinging through them. So, yeah, it's a mess right now for him. I think it's important for the long term that they get him right. I don't think it's absolutely essential that they do this season, but I think it could take the offense. Here's the thing. The offense, not everybody's going to be clicking like this for the next month and a half, 2 months. What do we got? 2 months. So you want Suzuki to bounce back. You need him to have a hot stretch, because while Bellinger carries the team and Swanson is hitting long balls right now and you know, Talkman is hot, someone's going to go in a slump eventually. Someone's going to struggle. Like, Ian Happ was struggling, and now Ian Happ looks good at the plate again, right? So you need to be able to cover for these guys. You need a deep lineup. You need a deep bench. It's just how it is. And I really think, you know, for this team to, like, kind of surprise even further, I think they're going to need Suzuki. It's not essential, but I think it can help take them to another level and maybe push them deeper in the playoffs.
Well, and forget performance. Someone will get hurt.
Yeah. Absolutely.
At some point, someone in this chain of players is going to get hurt, and it's going to result in moving everyone around again, which, that's a luxury the Cubs have because of this roster. It's a wonderful thing that there are, you know, 15 different formulations of how they can get the same group of guys into the lineup. But at the end of it, you still want all of the bats to be productive. And so that's going to mean that if right field opens back up, well, it'd probably be Suzuki, as it should, but, you know, you'd actually need him to produce at that point. And just statistically, that's more likely than not. It's more likely than not that someone in this chain will get hurt for at least a couple weeks. And maybe the Cubs will get lucky, and that'll align itself well with Suzuki finding something and getting in a good rhythm, and who knows. But until that happens, I think I appreciate the Cubs' approach to this, which is, Can't try to work stuff out in mid-August of a competitive year.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So, speaking of which, let's talk about this loss to the Mets last night, which, Cubs didn't score a lot of runs. Senga was really good. That forkball was really, really good last night, I thought. And the rain delay came and sort of mucked up other plans and whatever. You look at the production of the lineup and you say, well, Cody hit, and that's about it, and throw the rest away. Fine. It happens. But even if they had put together another one of these 5 or 6 run performances, they're still going to lose. And that's because Drew Smyly had another rough outing. The two Alonso homers stand out, obviously, and those were bad pitches, man. Those were bad pitches. But those are not as punishing if there aren't guys on base, if he's not getting lined up all over the field otherwise, if he's not walking guys. And you all know, listening, it's a continuation of a stretch. And you can say it's been six really bad outings, or you can actually go back to late May. And it's an ERA over seven, and it's really only a handful of outings that were good competitive outings against about 10 that just, I think the Cubs won some of those games because they managed to make it work, but it was about 10. It's been about 10 of his last 13 outings that just were not giving the Cubs a chance. And you come up to the same question as you would with Suzuki. Like, if Drew Smyly needs to work on some things, if he can get right and you need him to get right, but how much longer can you afford to be letting him take these starts or even a piggyback on an opener to work this out? Especially at a time when the Cubs are already without Marcus Stroman, who himself was not right. And the Cubs pulled the cord on that one, which I think was the right move. You know, I don't know. I don't know. All I know is it's hard to justify Drew Smyly taking the next start when his turn comes up in the rotation. If you're serious about not leaving anything on the table to compete right now.
Yeah. Before I get to Smyly, I just want to touch on what you said about how Senga was great. Senga was great. I thought there were some opportunities and some things. I think it's so interesting how one little thing goes wrong and it can derail a chance for the offense. You know, like there was that close call Nico should have had that would have been bases loaded, right? If Nico takes that walk, bases loaded, no outs. There was Hap slipping on the base and then that ending a threat. And then there were a couple things where it's like all these things have been going the Cubs' way lately and they didn't go their way on that night. Now, I'm not saying that the Cubs should have won that game. I'm just pointing out that this is interesting how baseball works. Sometimes everything falls and that one ball that falls through, gets through a infielder's glove or whatever, it changes everything and it goes from no runs to four runs, whatever that is. But I thought they put up good at bats and the offense is the least of my concerns right now. They continue to impress me. Even scoring just two runs yesterday, I thought they put up some good at bats, especially pre rain delay. And then the two runs that Smyly gave up to make it 7-2, I thought that was a lot of the rains coming down pretty hard. They should have probably put it in delay earlier.
Two infield,
yeah,
two hits on the infield.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, if that's clean weather, that's a no run inning in my mind. But the point that you're making that's completely valid and correct is that Drew Smyly isn't getting the job done right now. He knows that. The Cubs know that. There's a reason they've been creative with him lately. Opener twice against St. Louis. I don't know for sure what they're going to do, but there is the option of not really skipping his start, but having, I guess it's skipping his start, and it would be, whoever takes Stroman's start in Toronto, right? It would not, they have multiple off days.
Well, they had been planning
only one
to
they
were planning to skip Stroman's start anyway using the off days. So this is tricky.
Yeah, so with Stroman on the IL, it just makes too much sense to start Assad or Wisniewski. We'll see how the next couple of games go, but that I think makes sense against Toronto. Toronto has like a 1.15 weighted runs created plus against lefties. They crush lefties. But beyond that, I think this is another thing where people just want to say DFA, get rid of him. First of all, you can't do that. You just cannot get rid of pitching depth at this point in the season. He's a veteran. He's proven that he can pitch well. He's in a really rough stretch right now. They need to figure out how they can use him. I don't love the idea of moving him to the bullpen. I know it's a one-year sample size, but he's not doing well against lefties this year. I don't know how you'd really use him out of the bullpen. He has experience in there.
Well, he'd have to be Yeah. He'd have to be a true long reliever.
Right.
Like, he would have to replace the role of whichever guy took his spot.
And that's tough. That's tough because I don't think Ross would... Like, Ross wouldn't use him as a lefty reliever, right? As a like, he just wouldn't trust him in that situation to get a lefty out in a big situation. He really likes having Wisniewski and Assad in the bullpen because they've been performing so well out of, in those roles. And it really lengthens the bullpen. It really makes sure he doesn't have to lean on the four guys that he's been leaning on, and Fulmer, Leiter, who am I missing? Alzolay, and am I missing someone? Merriweather, thank you. So, you know, he's been leaning on those guys. Those guys have pitched a lot lately. Whenever I see on Twitter, like, why did he go to this guy? Why isn't he pulling this guy? Hey, like, are you only watching this baseball game? Because the bullpen's gassed. They're in the middle of 16 straight in 16 days. You cannot pull the pitcher every single time in the third or fourth inning. Eventually it catches up to you, and you're going to not only lose that game, but cost yourself multiple other games going forward. I know it's always the desire to win that game that night, and that's absolutely Ross's desire because he's so competitive, but you can't always go to the best reliever, and you can't always just say, like, oh, it's obvious this guy's struggling, you got to pull him. Like, you have to push guys sometimes. You have to try and save your bullpen. You have to try and see if they can weather the storm and give you an extra inning or two. He tried to do that with Smiley last night, and Smiley couldn't do it, obviously, as the weather got worse. I don't know what the answer is. I don't think it's as easy as just remove him from the rotation. I don't think it is. I think it really complicates things. When Stroman returns, I think the most important thing is Stroman needs to return, stabilize the front four of the rotation, and then you have to kind of figure out how you're going to pick and choose moments to kind of maybe use an opener. Right now they just need to get through this stretch of no Stroman. I think part of it is let Assad or Wisniewski start this weekend in Toronto. I think that... I don't know what decision they've made, but I think that's on the table. I think it's just give them a break in that Toronto series. Like, they really hit lefties well. I don't think it would end well, and you need to kind of find ways to pick and choose when he goes. I think that's the ultimate thing. Like, get to Stroman being healthy, and then you can kind of pick and choose, see the matchups. How long do we want to use him? How's our bullpen looking? Those types of things. Another thing is, like, so your depth was Wisniewski, Assad, and then potentially Ben Brown, right? That was your depth. And now it Wisniewski and Assad are in the bullpen and needed to an extent, and Ben Brown's on the AAA IL. So it's just, that complicates it all. It's not as simple as take him out of the rotation. Because it changes everything else with the bullpen and makes things more difficult. It creates another problem, essentially.
Not only in the nearer term, but potentially over the next 8 weeks, because as we've talked about at length in relation to the trade deadline, the Cubs are going to need innings. You know, it's the same point that Sahadev is making about, you know, you have to manage to win that night, but you can't grind four relievers into dust because then you don't have them in September when you need them. And God forbid, if you make the playoffs, you're a disaster because you have no bullpen. And so the Cubs do have to figure out how to get innings out of Smiley because he has been a capable big league pitcher. You know, it's not as though he's this unestablished guy who you're like, well, maybe he can make it, maybe he can't. No, we know he has the ability to cover big league innings. And the Cubs have to figure out not only how to get him back to that, but how to get value out of the innings he does give you in a way that doesn't hurt you every 5 days. And like Sahadev said, there are some things you can do with playing with matchups. You know, the Cubs, obviously, they didn't like the way it worked out with the Cardinals. And so it was like, well, maybe we can do an opener and play around that way. And I think it makes a lot of sense with the Blue Jays. You know, from where I sit, I would, you know, you'd want to line him up to be a true long reliever for that series if needed. But the problem is, you know, Wisniewski and Assad aren't necessarily fully stretched out because you also need them to be available in relief. You don't know how the next three games are going to play out, so you can't exactly precisely make a plan for what you're going to do this weekend. And so, I mean, that's the job. I'm setting up all the questions, and I won't pretend to have the answers because a lot of these things are not answerable until you get there day of. I do think that it's interesting that the Cubs have Caleb Killian now available in the bullpen to eat innings. That's another, I don't think this is a situation where, you know, he has had a run of success at Iowa. And I know that there is still some belief in his potential as a starter long term. I questioned that. I have wondered for a while how he would play because of his inability to miss bats, because he has such a diverse mix of pitches that doesn't seem to really be working for him, and because he does have premium velocity in bursts. He to me seems like a perfect candidate to pick one fastball and pick one off-speed pitch and go. And as we've seen with Daniel Palencia, that conversion process can take a little while. You can't just necessarily take a starter and be like, okay, you're a reliever now, you're a one-inning guy, go. And the Cubs have opted, for whatever reason, to not do that all year with Killian. He's been starting consistently at Iowa, again, with some success recently. And now he was clearly going to just be here to gobble up innings. You know, he was going to eat the rest of that game last night. The rain came and mucked it up. So I will be very curious to see what his next outing looks like, because in a way, if the Cubs do play with Smiley, it's almost like they have several guys available now to just gobble up innings. And unfortunately, again, you can't always plan that because not every game is going to be six runs in either direction. But I didn't want to get through this conversation without mentioning that Killian is here as well. We know probably still not ready to start in the big leagues. That was David Ross's quote earlier this year. But I don't know. I wonder what those conversations look like about now that last night has played out as it did. What do we want to do with Caleb Killian in the days ahead? Maybe he remains just the mop-up guy, or maybe you do start thinking about getting, if it plays out to permit it, maybe you try to get a little clever this weekend with coordinating Smiley and Killian.
Yeah, I mean, the addition of Killian does kind of ease some things in the sense of you have a little length in the bullpen now, and one more arm that can go, that can eat up some innings. And yes, yesterday's rain did screw up that ability, and I wonder what they do with Palencia. That was 37 pitches, rough inning for him.
I've been wondering if something was going to, whether you're going to say, okay, we need someone fresh.
Yeah, which is, I mean, he has flashes of like, oh, he's going to be a great reliever, and then other moments where it's like, oh, man, it's just like too inconsistent around the zone. Like, it's not like there's some pitches. Like, I read what you wrote, Brett, and you're right. Like, one pitch can change everything. He was so close to having a good inning. But I could say that about Anthony Kay against the Reds, right? He was so close to going 1-2-3 and then ends up, like, luckily it was a 20-5 game at the time to make it 20-9, whatever. But, yeah, I'm curious to see how they're going to work this all out with that bullpen, because Killian does give them a little bit more wiggle room there. And so maybe you can, if Killian stays up, you have Assad go, because he's the most stretched out, right? I mean, you basically keep Assad and, yeah. And, you know, I like Assad. I think Assad's been looking really good. Like, maybe it just makes sense, like, let him make that start and then continue to evaluate. You know, you have two guys that are stretched out, Assad and Smiley then, and then you just kind of mix and match. You know, it's not like you're not saying that Smiley's out of the rotation and you're not saying that Assad's in the rotation. You're just kind of saying, like, that fifth spot is up for grabs, essentially, and we're going to play the matchups, and we're going to be aggressive with how we handle this. We're going to be aggressive with when we pull guys, and you know, close games, we're really going to be aggressive with things and really play, you know, who fits well in this pocket of the lineup type stuff on that fifth day. Now, that means everybody else has to stay in line. You know, no, Jameson Taillon has to perform like he's been performing for the past, what is it now, month and a half? Stroman has to get back to who he was. Kyle Hendricks has to show that the Atlanta game was a blip. You know, I felt like Hendricks had been struggling a little bit before that. Do you know it was three consecutive quality starts before that Atlanta start? Three consecutive quality starts for Hendricks. So I thought he was a little off, but I think because those runs, like there was one game where he pitched like seven innings and he gave up like three runs early and then just worked through the rest and gave them a really good outing. Like that's kind of the type of stuff you want to see. Like that's what you wanted to see from Smiley yesterday. Like, okay, fine, you had a bad first, go out there and give him innings and like try and push through and bounce back after a rough, what everyone assumed was going to be a rough outing. But yeah, no, you can't have step backs from the other guys if this is how you're going to play it.
And that starts tonight with Taillon and the Mets. Cubs have two more in this series, and then obviously the Blue Jays series in Toronto comes thereafter. And a lot of what happens in the next 2 days are going to set up, are going to amplify or clarify this conversation that we've been having today. So we'll see where things stand when we talk to you next. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That is Sahadev Sharma. Get his at The Athletic. We appreciate you listening as always, and we will talk to you again soon. Take care.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.